From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Andy Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tool. So last week we talked about debugger, or as you say, debugger. Yeah. And so this week we're going to dive further into that with...
We're just going to get a bit deeper. We only got to the point where we got a crash dump popping up into the debugger or into procdump to save it to a file. And then we only got to the point where we opened that file, saw it in the debugger, in WinDBG, or otherwise known as WinBag.
Yeah.
And through the ECXR command, we jump to the line of code that we actually care about, but we haven't done any analysis yet.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do. We're going to jump into the analysis phase of this. This is hard. I mean, you might have to watch this video a couple times. Just don't feel disheartened if you're not tracking. This is hard stuff. So
stick with it. If I can stand here, you can stand here with me.
Yeah, definitely. And the best thing about video is you can wind it back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and ask questions in the comments if you need to. We'll always be here for you.
All right. So let's look at a dump file. So let's go for this crash that we had of a 64-bit program.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 64-bit's the default, I just get to double click. So in most of the time, you're good, right? You just find a dump file, double click, you're good. ECXR, and the code pops up. So the thing you want to do is, this is operating on code, right? And we're operating on variables. And there's two types of variables. There's ones that are on the stack and there's ones that are on the heap. And once you, when you do a DV command, you can see those, right?
And is a .NET stack any different from a native stack?
It is very different, actually. And the debugger is a native debugger. It's in all intents and purposes, a program written in 1995.
Yeah.
And it really hasn't changed much because fundamentally a PC is just the same, which is why we have great backwards compatibility story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Manage is completely different. The main difference is variables are not... kept on the stack because they're in the GC heap, right? And so we don't have the system.string on the stack. We have a pointer to the system.string that is in one of the GC heaps in Gen 0, 1, or 2, or if it's another class like the large object heap and stuff like that. And so none of these commands work. And if you do the command DV, so there's a whole lot of letters of the alphabet in the debugger, like R and K. D is for display.
Yeah.
D is display, and V is variables, so local variables. And if you click on one of these, you can go display type. And because it's known here, the debugger knows what this is, a string array. It knows all these things, and so it knows how to pull them apart. So if I do DT that, it will pull it apart and treats it as a WCHAR star and gives you the information.
Is there any difference between native and managed variables?
Yeah, there are. So C++ variables are much more succinct, right? They're just straight pieces of memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where managed has all these object references and stuff like that. And so when you're pulling apart them, you have to do it a completely different way. And the native debugger can't do that, all right? And we're going to have to use what's called debugger extensions, which is, you can just think of the word plugin for that.
Yeah.
And you can actually see what plugins you've got loaded by default. And so there's a command called dot chain. The rough guide is, and this is a very rough guide, if it starts with a letter, the command, it's something to do with display. It will give you this, draw the stack for you, draw the registers for you, just draw display data for you, like dblah. If it has a dot on the front, it will change the state of the debugger. So it may mean that you change from thread 1 to thread 2. It may mean that you change exception context, which is what we use for .ECXR, right? Dot chain, it's kind of in the middle ground, is that it can load and unload extensions, right? And dot chain is actually just the lister. There's a command called dot load, and there's a command called dot unload. So like we can unload an extension called ext, which is currently loaded, and then it will be gone from the list, and then we could load it again if we wanted. And so it's back again. The debugger, when it opens up the dump file, it works out what operating system it came from. And so the debugger ships with a whole lot of extensions. We only have three or four, maybe four or five loaded. For a user mode process, you'll get UEXT. For a kernel dump file, you'll get KEXT, right? WDF, which is Windows Driver Framework, won't be loaded by default ever. Windows Driver Framework is to debug WDF device drivers, which is the class of device driver starting in Vista or Windows 7. And so if you're in a kernel dump file and you're looking at a WDF driver, you go dot load WDF KD. KD is kernel debugging. A lot of extensions tend to have KD on the end to give you that mnemonic. And then you'll have all these additional commands available to you. One of the great ways of learning what there is there is a command called .extmatch. So it's dot extensions, which is debug extensions, match it. And so this say, find anything to do with memory. There isn't any. Try anything to do with load. Oh, find something. List. All right. So those two extensions export a function called list. And if I go, I don't even know what this command does, then it didn't find anything to work on. And then it would do its thing.
So you talked about ones that start with letters and ones that start with dots. What does it mean when it starts with a bang?
Bang means it's in an extension, so it's in one of those DLLs. So whenever it's got a bang on it, the name here is the name of the extension. So there's XTS, DBG Hub, XTH, whatever. Dot, and then there's the command. So it's kind of like, and once you've done it once, that extension comes to the top of the list. So the list that is here is the list of the order. So there was the classic example is help. Whoops. Find all the ones with help. All right. And so if I do a bang help, well, it resolves to four different DLLs. Whoever's on the top of the list is the one that will run. So it will run the ext.help.
Cool.
All right. What we need for .NET is the .NET extension. So it's a plugin made on the top of it, and that extension. So instead of doing like DV to show local variables, you do things like bang dump stack objects DSO, and same with the stack. The K command doesn't work either, right? Which draws a stack because it doesn't know how to unwind a .NET stack because it's laid out completely different to than a native one.
Yeah,
and so that one's dump stack. So you need to find the extension, right? And the extension's called SOS, Son of Strike. And so let's jump out this guy. And what we're going to do is let's get some dump files. And we're going to I should have done this before, but I didn't. Let's copy this guy. I'm going to use procdump 5.1 here. That's take a full, so because it's going to be a managed program, it has to be a full dump file, and we're just going to, when it hits an exception of any type, we're going to take a dump file, I'm not going to filter it down to something, and we're going to wait for a program that starts with the word Windows, because I know I've got a program that starts with the word Windows. Channel 9 examples, and like this program, Windows Form Application, up it comes, it's picked up that CLR 2.0, we do a first chance, it fired, we get a dump file. And I'm going to do that again, and I'm going to do it for a .NET 4 program, which is what this guy is. And so you can see it picked up that version .NET 4. Mm-hmm. .NET 2 and .NET 4 are completely different. It's .NET has moved from 1, 1.1, 2, 3, 3, 5, 4, 4, 5, but the engine itself changed. So we changed the classes in the .NET framework, but only at .NET 2 and .NET 4 did we actually change the engine, right? And so .NET 2, 3, and 3.5 actually all operate on top of the 2.0 engine. 3 and 3.5 just happen to have additional classes in that thing. So
is that why sometimes with software you install it and you have the latest .NET, but sometimes you can go back and install an earlier one?
And if you look in the Windows folder, you actually can tell the difference because under here, under Microsoft.NET, you'll notice that there's folders that have short names on them. Mm-hmm. They're not engines, right? They're just purely classes.
Yeah.
And so this is the four engines we've ever released. 1 and 1.1, I'm not even going to talk about. The support in them is quite bad for debugging.
Yeah.
Only in version 2 and 4 did we get to the point where we can actually debug them quite nicely.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be using a 1 and 1.1 framework anyway. So inside these folders is actually what we want. There's the sos.dll I was talking about. It's shipped with Windows, and there it is, sos.dll. You'll notice that there's a framework and there is a framework 64 folder, right? These ones under here are 32-bit DLLs. You can only load a 32-bit DLL in a 32-bit process. If you are debugging a 32-bit .NET framework program using the 32-bit debugger, you will use the 32-bit sos.dll, and the same thing goes for 64. So with the dump file we have, this one here, this the .NET 2 one, oops, missed a button. I know that .NET 2 runs as 64-bit on a 64-bit program. So we're going to open that up, and that's confirmed here by seeing 64 here. And you can see that this thing stops on a CLR exception because I asked it to capture the first exception that it saw. ECXR jumps to it. But you notice that none of the source code jumped up and all that type of stuff. That just doesn't exist, right? This is the context of when it happened, and that's the line of code where it happened, but we're not really seeing what's going on. And if we do a stack, it looks rubbish. So what we can do is use that sos.dll. So there's two ways of loading DLL. You can go load and then just give it a name. So like, you know, defrag. Let's say that defrag's made a DLL.
Yeah.
And if you give it a path, that's fine. You know, it might be in that folder and it will load, right? And it's going to say it's not there. The other way of doing it is what's called load by. And so what this does is it goes, I don't know where this is on the hard drive. Let's use some evidence from the dump file to work that out. And the way that the evidence works is there's a command called lm, list modules. And under .NET 2, the runtime is called MS CoreWorks, MSCORWKS, which is Microsoft Core, which is the CLR, and WKS stands for workstation, because back in .NET 2, we did plan to actually release a server version. There was going to be a .MS Core SRV for server, but we decided that the workstation SKU was so good that we could use it on servers. So in here, there is MS CoreWorks right here, right? And if we do LM, and we just list, M is for mask. So none of these commands care about spaces. They're all, it's letter after letter after letter, they're all dependent on just the ordering of the letters.
Yeah.
And so I can just bring that down to one line, right? And we can see that I've got a PDB symbol, which is the private symbol for it. So I kind of know what's in it, but not really. But that's fine. So what we need to do is do V, right, for the verbose mode. And what we can see is that it's on the hard drive in this folder, right? That's the same folder that had the sos.dll. And that's what the load by function is. So when you get a .NET program, what you need to do is instead of doing .load to load SOS, which you won't find it because it's not in the debugger folder and it's not in the path, you go .load by sos.dll, and then you say, let's use the module name. So the module name usually is the name of the DLL. Yeah. It doesn't have to be always, but you're using the module name as the key. And wherever that is on the hard drive, try loading sos.dll from the same folder, right? If I do that, there's no error, it's clean. And we can see here that it's now loaded, it's done this whole thing for you. Right, .NET 2 uses MS CoreWorks. .NET 4, and .NET 4 on a 64-bit program compiled with Windows Studio, so Visual Studio 2010 runs as a 32-bit app. It's just the way it happens. So this is where we're going to use our second context menu.
If you don't have that set up, watch last show.
Yep. And we can double-check that we've got the right architecture here. X86 is in here, and that's matching our X86 up here in the title bar. We jump to the exception context record just to be in the right place. And then in this case, the module is called CLR. They renamed it in .NET 4, right? And so the same thing goes .load by sos.dll, and we're using CLR as the key. And so we do a chain, and you'll see that we actually pulled it up out of the 32-bit folder instead of the 64-bit one, and it's picked up all the version number. So this is where things can fall down. If you grabbed a dump file from another machine, and they are not patched to the same level that you are, the version of the debugger will be different. Right, and so you're just using your local hard drive version of sos.dll, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case and there is a mismatch, just go to the foreign server, go into the .NET Framework folder, pick up the sos.dll, and then bring it to your own box, just put it into the same folder with the dump file.
Yeah.
And instead of doing .load by, just go .load
yeah.
sos.dll. And then you'll be matched. So in the .NET world, instead of doing a k command, which shows a stack, you do dump stack, right? And this knows how to pull apart a .NET stack and say, all that gibberish that we had before now is turned into real function names, all right? The only slight problem with dump stack, which is what I just did, is it ignores the exception context record, right? So you know, we want to home it to the point where we're up to, but unfortunately this goes back from where we were in the first place. It's just one of the unfortunate side effects of that extension. And you can see the exception being thrown. Here's the first chance turning into extend exception and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And actually all this code here is actually the code that procdump injected into the process to catch the thing. This code is not normal.
Yeah.
It's actually injected code from procdump. So what you can do though is .cls. This is one of my favorite commands. It's CLS. The number of times I've typed .cls in a command prompt instead of CLS drives me nuts because I'm in the debugger so much. It's just become my default CLS thing. So what you can do is we'll jump to that context record, which works, and then there's a thing called dump stack objects. And most debugger extensions have the long name and the short one because inherently we're lazy people, right? And so if I do dump stack objects, it's going to print out the equivalent of me doing a DV, right? DV is per frame, and I'm going to go back to what frame-based homing means in a sec, but it's printed out from where you were on the stack to the bottom of every single object that you can find. It also finds the objects in the registers. That's important because we want to change to the context and then read these registers of what it was like, and then that way these three here are all good. And you can see that it's pre-allocated on the stack before it threw it, the system.exception. It shows every location on the stack, this is the memory addresses, where it found something. All of these are the same objects. They have all the same value. And so you can look at that and you go dump object. And then you just go, oh, I didn't do copy paste. And then it spits out the object and it's all lots of text on the screen. Not the best experience. So there's a thing in the debugger called DML, Debugger Markup Language, and there's a command called prefer underscore DML, and then you say 1 to turn it on. So MS CoreWorks unfortunately doesn't have this, but .NET 4's CLR, SOS for CLR for .NET 4 does have this support.
Yeah.
And so if I'll do a CLS again, and we'll do that dump stack objects again, and now it's added hyperlinks to everything. All right.
Nice.
The other one that you can do is the k command before was just doing the raw boring as well. The k command for native does the same thing, and it also has it on the end, right? Has the ability to look at frames. So I'll jump to that in a sec.
And how long does that persist? So you close it
until you close it again. So what I would do personally, and this is how I actually wrote a debugger extension that just sets that when it boots. And if you want to do that, go read my MCM Magazine series article on how to write debug extensions. The other option to do it is just to pass it in on the command line.
Yeah.
And so in your registry where we had that WinDBG settings that we made before, what you would do, there's two ways of doing this. You can actually say, just set a command. So when as soon as the debugger comes live, run this command.
Yeah.
You actually, with another syntax, which involves dollar signs and stuff, you actually can give it the name of a file with commands, right? And you put one command per line, and it will run all those commands when you open the debugger. So preferred DML is one of those things where you just go, just turn it on.
Yeah.
The other one I do is you put a semicolon to break up commands, I do dot lines, and I say, I think it's 0, and it turns line numbers off, but you only need that internal to Microsoft, so otherwise you kind of ignore it.
Yeah.
So we have DML, and so we can just click on these guys, right? And so we can click on the exception, and now we get nice, cool DML everywhere. So it's just a matter of going, okay, here's the message of the exception, and this is my managed exception. That's the name of the thing. Nice. So much more clicky-clicky.
Yeah.
Right? So let's jump back to the... if we do the same thing in .NET 2, it's rubbish. You just don't get any of that stuff. Let's jump back to the straight C one. And I'm going to do the same thing here. So before, it was boring and ugly, right? And you see how the source code's on the end here, right? If I go dot .lines, which toggles it on and off, which is what I was talking about, that disappeared on the end.
Yeah.
That's why I actually like having lines turned off, because it's just... it's a little bit too much clutter when you're trying to write your case notes and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's why I have it turned off. So particularly in C language, having DML on is useful because you want to choose frames. So we are currently way up here, right? I can use an exception context record to change the context to this frame. But if there is no exception context record for what you care about, let's say that what you cared about was two or three functions below, you can change the frame that is the context. So currently, the top one of the stack is where a DV command would be, which is B for the top one. Instead of me jumping to the exception context record to jump down to here, I can click on this. What it's going to give me is the registers are not correct here. But its position in the stack is. So I know, all right, here's my function call, and which means that, you know, minus 16 and minus 48 bytes, I should find local variables in my stack.
Yeah.
And so if you click on a frame on the side, you can get that, and then the DV is local. You can move up and down frames by using dot frame. So, you know, I can say go to frame F, and I can then, if I do that, then I won't have anything useful. And then I can go back up to frame, frame C. Right, everything's in hexadecimal by default in the debugger, and mm-hmm. It comes back, and then it works. If you're flying around, there's actually two fast ways. You can use .f plus to go, and this is one of the commands that supports repetition. So if you keep on pressing enter afterwards,
yeah. It
keeps on running it over and over again. And so you can use minus f plus in one direction and minus f minus in the other direction.
Nice.
All right, and go through. Now, the cool thing about this is if you scroll through your stack really fast and just go... right, it will open up every single source code window associated with every frame that you got for anything that you have source code for. So mm-hmm. You can fly through your things and then have everything like preloaded. So we've done frames, we've done a bit of DML value add. Because that's now there, we have got DML turned on, the LM command looks better, right?
Yeah.
And so we can say, look at that. And everything's much more, just more clicky friendly. It is much faster to develop that way. Something that I discovered last week on a support case is procdump and the debugger don't support Silverlight. I naively thought that the .NET framework is what drove Silverlight. It's actually a completely different engine. So I'm going to go through a little demo of what the experience is like, right? And so let's bring up a Silverlight website. What could we use at Silverlight? Let me think. And we'll get this playing, for example. Got some very attractive men there. And then we will use the grabbing tool. It helps if I actually have IE up. We'll use Process Explorer's grabbing tool to find out where this is. So this is 4192. All right.
And did that grab the Silverlight embed, or did it grab
the IE part of the window? So it was whatever the topmost window it grabbed.
Yeah.
So we're going to get a full dump of this guy when there's an exception. And for now, I'm just going to do filter with nothing, so we can see what's flying around.
Yeah.
And then I'll show you how we can value add. Now, Silverlight's running in this, and what I'll do is I'll just go backwards. All right. These ones are all native exceptions, mm-hmm. right? And we talked about that in the procdump episode, episode 10. These two, this is what grabbed my attention. I went, why isn't procdump picking up these CLR exceptions, which is what procdump's designed to do?
Yeah.
And it's because there's a slightly different .NET runtime in Silverlight, and we don't pick it up. There's actually exceptions flying around here that we care about, right? We care about these two exceptions. And so what you can do... just detach here, is we'll close all this, we'll go to home. And then there's a subsystem called Silverlight Developer Runtime. And we'll just go to Silverlight. And right here, there's a 32-bit runtime and a 64-bit runtime. I have a 64-bit OS, so I want the 64-bit runtime. We're just going to install this. Doesn't take too long. And what this is going to do is, while it's installing, I'll hopefully see the old files. Silverlight is a x86 app most of the time, so I'll use that. Silverlight 5.1 is what we're up to. So in here, there is no sos.dll. And there's not the debugging subsystem that procdump relies on, right? And so if we install the debugging, the developer version of Silverlight rather than the general general public release one, we now have sos.dll, and we also have dbgshim.dll. dbgshim is what procdump needs to capture a Silverlight exception. And then sos.dll is what we need to debug it. So now, once this guy is finished, and we bring up, we'll bring up a defrag again, and we will get Explorer to find out his number. So you can see there's a little pink bar around the top. So it looks like that the drawing space is one window. There's no sub window in that. 2604 is our number. So we're clear screen. Well, I didn't do .cls. Rare for me. 2604 is what I said. And we'll do that again. So this time, let's see what happens. We'll click on this. Some JavaScript things, which is very regular because it's just timeouts.
Yeah.
And we'll start Silverlight. And you can see now that procdump 5.1, which as I said last week, should be out roughly the time that this episode airs. You now are pulling out the CLR exceptions.
Very nice.
Also, the Silverlight exceptions. I'm not sure what you call them. Yeah. And so let's suck up one of these guys and actually get one. So it's got XML in the name. So that'll do. And I'll go back a page. And you can now see a whole lot of threads aborting inside the Silverlight app. Notice we've lost all the Java ones.
Yeah.
.NET 4 and Silverlight 5 both don't support interop debugging. So for procdump to be able to get these exceptions, it had to give up on also catching native exceptions.
Yeah.
So that's why we're not seeing the JavaScript ones anymore. If you want to see the JavaScript ones, put minus G on the command line, and that will ignore, which is what G stands for, the transition to manage debugging exclusively. So just add the minus G command line. Go back into here, and we've caught our exception. It was a full dump, as I said, because this is a managed program. Mm-hmm. Have to get full dumps. And we have our exception caught. So let's do the same thing that we did with a .NET program, but let's do it for a Silverlight program. This was a x86 program. Internet Explorer is an x86 app. Once again, we can check it right there.
Yeah.
Procdump has put in a nice exception context record for us at the point. You can actually see a breakpoint is what it was. Look at the stack. Looks terrible. See, it's all this yucky pure assembler. It's even worse than what you see in .NET. So much like before, there is modules. The modules in this guy, actually I'll do a and then put a mask on it. So much like .NET 4, it has a CLR name. In Silverlight, it's called Core CLR because it's like a subset core version of the framework. And so instead of doing for SOS, actually before I do that, I'll show you where it is on the disk. It's not really going to be a surprise, is it, that it's going to be in the Silverlight folder, right, which we just installed. So this is what this is. You'll get Core CLR in both the retail and the developer SKUs, but SOS is only in the developer runtime. So if we now do a load by, and we're going to load sos.dll, Core CLR, and that's now loaded, and we can prove the point we're doing .chain. There it is, right up there. Once again, this DLL also has to match the architecture. You have to use the x86 debugger with the x86 target, blah, 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 blah. And now what we can do is do dump stack, right? So now, when we do this, we'll see up the top, lots of text, you know, lots and lots of events, right? This is all the exception being thrown into ProcDump. Once again, it's more code that ProcDump has injected into the target so it can scavenge this information. And then right here is the person who sent the code. Once again, unfortunately, DumpStack doesn't use the exception context record for this. It just gives you the raw stack regardless of context. But what we can do is DumpStack object, same thing as CLR has for .NET. The Silverlight one has the same thing. And this is all the things it's found. And here's the exception that got thrown. Once again, which I didn't press save on that registry change. I didn't turn DML on. Actually, I'll do it. Here's the exception. We can click on that. Ooh, what are you doing? Okay. And here's the exception being printed out. And yeah, and here's the message. And cannot find config.xml in the application's zap package. I have no idea what that means. I probably should tell the Channel 9 guys, hey, Channel 9 guys, you have this weird exception. I don't know if it's good or bad, but...
Yeah.
A lot of exceptions, in fact, the vast majority are absolutely benign.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't want to have a config file. This is probably for some special debug mode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we look for it, and if it's there, we go into some special mode and do stuff. So now we've been able to debug Silverlight, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
New to me.
Yeah.
I only coded it last week. CLR, .NET 2, .NET 4, and native, right? So you can see your stack, K. The important thing to do with the exception context record is look at the line of code that if it's a crash, what went wrong, you can kind of work it out. And it's kind of, you've got a bit more agility in the debugger. So the main commands to remember, DSO for dump stack objects, which is equivalent of DV in native world. DV requires private symbols, DSO will work on. There's no such thing as symbols in CLR-based programs. The program itself, because it's IL compiled, intrinsically has the metadata, so you don't need symbols to pull it apart. And then DSO, and then the other one was dump stack, just to do the equivalent of the K command.
Yeah.
Remember to do .preferDML to make your life easier, mm-hmm. and for the sake of clean stacks, do .lines and then that toggles it on and off. And then you can put a parameter on the end to force it. I think it's E or D or 1 or 0 to do that. And we'll leave it there. So next week, Chad's going to do the same thing. In this last two episodes, we've been able to capture a crash or capture an unexpected exception that we care about and put it to a file. We've been able to jump from that position, the captured position to the exception context position. And we've been able to go up and down the stack and look at the local variables through .frame and DV commands. And then the equivalent in .NET. And what Chad's going to do is the same thing for a kernel, which is quite different. So kernel is all about every single CPU. What we have here is 56 threads, and each one of these things at the bottom is looking at each thread. So currently that's the thread of 5. If I change to 1, so tilde is the thread command, 1 is the thread I care about, S is the one I want to set as my current context. I am now in 1, and so I see that guy. In a user dump, you're seeing every single thread. In a kernel dump, you are seeing every single CPU, and threads of processes are just data, right? And there's a completely different way of looking at the world on kernel dumps, and that's what Chad's going to go through.
Nice. All right. Well, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can send an email to defragtools@microsoft.com.
Well, you can send it to Defrag, and Gove can have a first stab.
Yeah, let him take a first shot. And then also leave messages in the comments for the show, and we can answer there as well.
Definitely.
All right, see you next week.
Have a good week.